Yeah, deer, that is a good question. Sheep eat more grass, more forbs. Deer can browse more. So I don't know if there might be some competition, but I don't know if it's a detriment. I don't know if it's a negative, if it's to the point where it's negative on the bighorn sheep. Yeah, deer are more browsers, sheep are more forage in the summer. Winter there may be some. The sheep tend to go in higher elevation and stay on the cliffs in the wintertime more than the whitetails. The whitetails hang lower elevation, so there's kind of an elevation split in the wintertime. So that might reduce competition. Bighorn sheep also access different habitats than the whitetail. Whitetail love the river valley. The bighorn sheep love the sides, the cliffs. So the separation. Yeah, there's food in those cliffs as well. And the sheep actually, yeah, on some of this data, they're ranging from valley bottom to the top. They're all over the sides. So, but yeah, it's a good question. I don't know exactly what degree of competition there is. Yeah, well, this is just distribution. And so this is some of the radio collar data. So this is a ewe, this is a ram. And what the graduate student's looking at is right here is distribution. So you can see that there's these clusters. It's hard to tell. That's actually the town of Loomis. Where's Loomis? Loomis is right there. So you have a cluster there, cluster there, cluster there, and a little cluster there. She's trying to figure out what are they using, what habitats are they using in the Sin Lake, and how can we make more? How does the burning and timber thinning affect that? So she just started wrapping up her data collection, and she's now moving into analysis. This is one of our rams, and it shows you how much he moves. So one ram, this is Spectacle Lake, and then this is above Palmer. And you can see he's not as confined as the ewe or as specific, but he obviously has his places he likes as well. So this is just distribution. This is one animal, many data points. Yeah, this is one animal. Right. Yeah, the yellow is where they spend more time. Okay, one thing we did find when we captured in February 2011, for the first time, we found Sauroptic mange. Sauroptic mange is this little mite found by, well, we first noticed it by the crusty, flaky, dry skin in the ears. Sauroptic mange actually has the ability to basically lose hair. The animal can lose its hair. When an animal doesn't have any hair, obviously it's in trouble. This ram, so we found this in February, end of February. This ram was found, I want to say in November or January. It was found right before we found ours, before we identified it in the Sin Lake and herd. This was identified in the Olala herd, which is at the northern portions of the Similkameen River in British Columbia. It is the first time that they have found it in British Columbia. We've had it down in Hell's Canyon before, but we've never had it up in the Okanagan. We've never had it anywhere outside that. How it got to either of these herds is a matter of debate. Nobody really knows. The question is, what is it going to do? We just identified it. We were talking earlier about the poor lamb recruitment this year. This may have something to do with that. We don't know yet. But this is one reason. This and the low lamb recruitment is one reason we're trying to monitor the herd more closely. What do you do about it? Sauroptic mange also infects domestic sheep, but the domestic sheep growers were able to eradicate it with DIP by 1927. Can we DIP all the bighorn sheep? I don't think so. It's limited options on what you can do to a wild animal. The big question is, how is it going to affect the herd? And right now we're just monitoring. So that was interesting when we found it. So Mount Hull. Mount Hull was made or was started with seven bighorn sheep in 1970 from the Clemens herd. Clemens herd was started from the Sinlehiken herd. Since then, we've augmented from Kamloops and from John Day, Oregon. And we've actually exported sheep just recently, 2009 and 2011, to the Hell's Gate Reserve herd, which I'll talk about here in a minute. So this photo is actually taken by Justin Hogg, our assistant wildlife manager at the Sinlehiken. So he's pretty good. So the Mount Hull herd, I call these guys my three amigos. Yeah, Mount Hull is actually falls within the tribal, the Colville Confederated Tribe north half, where they have subsistence hunting and gathering rights. So they are co-managed by the tribe. How this affects the herd is basically we just put up the same number of tags. So if WDFW harvests a ram, they'll harvest a ram. So it's actually a very good cooperation. It's been a good partnership and it's working well. So we just match each other's tag. That's pretty much how it works. So it's also managed to ensure a healthy, productive population. It's currently estimated at 100 animals. Mount Hull has been, it's been pretty neat to watch. From 1970 to 2000, it kind of hung on. It was about 50 animals, got up 50, 60 animals. And then the Rocky Hull fire burned. I don't know how many of you remember that or seen it. Rocky Hull burned. Rocky Hull burned 9,000 acres. It actually, took some buildings. It was quite a wildfire. It was wind-driven and whipped through that 9,000 acres pretty quickly. So very sorry that people lost their buildings. However, it was fantastic for the bighorn sheep. So it took out a lot of conifer trees. It took out a lot of the old shrubs. It revamped the forbs. It revitalized the habitat for the bighorn sheep. So that burned in 2000, 2001. We kind of saw a dip in the population. And then from 2002, 2003, from that point on, we started to see a real growth curve in this herd. And it was great to watch. And so Rocky Hull Fire, I will say that the Forest Service was actually doing prescribed burning on Mount Hull specifically to encourage or to revamp the range for bighorn sheep. So the Forest Service was doing it. Rocky Hull Fire just did it better. That's all. It took more acres. So, it's also managed for recreational hunting and viewing. So I was actually out there doing a count one day, and this lady came over and just pulled over and started watching them. And I thought that was pretty cool. So that's the Mount Hull herd. Here's a lucky gentleman. I think he was 2006, I think. When a bighorn is harvested, be it a ram or a ewe, they have to receive a pin. So that's also part of what we do. We pin it. It's a permit for a bighorn sheep is a once-in-a-lifetime draw for a hunter. And hunters put in a lot of years of applying before they get drawn. So bighorn sheep hunters put a lot of effort into the hunt. And the majority of the hunters are out there before opening day, and they know which ram they're going to get. They put a lot of time, a lot of effort. It's a lifetime hunt for them, and they love it. They absolutely eat it up. And then here's the biologist coming with a power drill. And I tell you, they take a moment and they stand back, and I do a lot of explaining on how I'm not going to ruin their trophy. So it's kind of funny every time I pull out the power drill and trying to explain to them that I'm going to drill into this trophy animal they just took. So, but we have to. I have not messed one up yet. So I have it down to a fine art, and everybody's been pretty pleased so far. Yes, that's actually a pin. It has about a 3/4 inch stud to it. And it's that stud that's, it's shaped like a giant, like a big nail, a big diameter nail. And you just drill a hole in and you glue it in. And it's because the horns, there's actually a black market for bighorn sheep, head and horns. And it's our way of tracking them. They used to be branded, where you put a brand on them. Now it's this pin. And it's just to negate the black market trafficking. So some of the challenges with Mount Hull. With Mount Hull, this picture was actually sent to me from the DOT, Department of Transportation. This truck, it's actually the DOT supervisor for all of Okanagan County. And he sent me this. He pulled over because the entire herd was crossing 97 right in front of him, and he had this big truck coming. It's an issue. We've had, so as the population increased after the Rocky Hole fire, we saw an uptick in roadkill. And that was a concern to us. One, the safety on the highway, and two, the demise of our bighorn sheep or, individuals. And so we saw an uptick in roadkill. With the increase in the herd, we saw an uptick in agriculture damage. And here's an orchard. So here's Mount Hull. Here's an orchard. And that's actually 4 feet. That's 4 feet off the ground. And there's not a leaf. There's not an apple. And there's not a happy owner. So that was a fun field trip I made. I will say that orchard is no longer there. That orchard is now a parking lot for the Backcountry Horseman's Trail system. So this part of Mount Hull was was like a funnel. It was really a natural funnel, just the geography of it, funneling the sheep down the hill. It was an easy way for them to get down to the lower reaches, and it just so happened to funnel them right into an orchard. This is the only orchard on Mount Hull that I've seen this damage with. And it was just geography. So go ahead. Not that I've found. I've found Sinlahican sheep coming almost to the river. And I know Mount Hull comes to the river, actually down into it, but I've never known them to cross yet. But it would not surprise me if they do. Go ahead. There's two reasons. Water is one, I suspect. The biggest thing that I think drives the bighorn sheep down, most of the roadkill was in August and September. In August and September, things are pretty dry and crispy on top of Mount Hull on that west face. But if you look down, if you're a sheep up on this dry, crispy slope, and you look down, and there's all this irrigated alfalfa and irrigated orchard, where are you going to be? So I think it's just that's where the green lush forage is down in the valley bottom during that time of year, and that's what brought them down, that and the river. I've actually seen them pass through orchards to actually get at the native forage. I don't believe that the grasses and the trees are as palatable as the natural forage for them. So if they had a choice, they'll take the natural forage. Maybe not the apples and the leaves in this case, though. And here's this landowner obviously has a pretty good view of the bighorn sheep in front of their house. But again, they're grazing through an alfalfa field. This was, I'm trying to remember the time of year. This was early spring, and I think this was starting to green up, and this wasn't. So again, more succulent forage was driving them down. So what did we do? We did talk about a fence. From 2003 to about 2006, we averaged about 4 sheep a year being struck on the highway. So we erected signs, if some of you have seen those. Signs are somewhat effective. Over time, people block them out of their minds and just keep driving. So we decided to trap. and relocate some of the sheep. And we also implemented ewe harvest for the first time. And so we put up two ewes. That means Colville Tribe also put up two ewes. And ours, one of ours went to a youth only, which I thought was a pretty nice move to give our youth a chance at an animal species that's pretty unique. So I thought that was a pretty good move. So this is a corral trap, and here's my sheep outside of the corral trap. So here they are actually in there. So we tried the corral trap for the first time, it worked okay, not great. We didn't get the results that we wanted. Being co-managed, we set this up in 2009. You bait it with hay and apples. In 2009, the Colville Confederated Tribe actually won a grant to establish to reestablish bighorn sheep on their reservation. It was a native species for them, and they wanted it back as a cultural, both culturally and as as recreation on the reservation. So we said, we have too many sheep. We put it out to all the western states on, hey, does anybody want sheep? And the Colvilles responded that they'll take them. So we trapped. In 2009, we didn't get the results we wanted. One thing that was interesting was these black tarps. It's not the cage that keeps the sheep in. You watch them go in there, and you actually remotely drop these big black sheets unfurl. They're actually weighted with railroad ties, and so they just drop down real quick, and that's actually what traps the sheep. Sheep will not run through anything it cannot see through. And so you make the curtains drop, and you run up there, and you close the door. Okay? So we dropped the curtain, we ran up there, and we close the door, and then somebody goes inside and puts them. There's actually a little chute-type scenario in there. And I was the guy to run in there, okay? So I ran in, the guy behind me closed the door, and I got all these sheep doing circles around me. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to get them in there. And so I went, hey! I just yelled at them, and they all ran through the door except for one ewe. One ewe, which surprised me, one ewe jumped so high, she got her front legs over the top of that tarp, which was 11 feet. And then she slid down the tarp and went in, and we caught her. So I was very impressed. The ability of these animals to jump is just incredible. So it was pretty cool. So the next time we trapped, we brought back the helicopter, and they did very well. And we, I think we've removed a total of 18 sheep off the mountain, and they've all gone to the Hell's Gate Reserve, which is the herd that the Colvilles have started. Oh, and by the way, we had no roadkill in 2011 or 2010. And in 07 through 09, we averaged 1 to 3 every year. So I can claim it was us. I don't really know. I don't really know why there's a decrease in roadkill, but there is. So that's kind of where we're at with it. Question? Well, that's good. That's good. I think part of it is the DOT has switched. They're not using as much rock salt. The sheep will come down to the highway and lick the road for the rock salt. They're using more of that new de-icer. That new de-icer does not seem to bring the sheep down as much as the rock salt did. So maybe it's a little bit of everything. Mount Hull, we have domestic dogs. So domestic dogs, and you know, here's Mount Hull where the bighorn sheep are, and we have sheep just down below. So again, same issues as this in Lincoln. We have dogs chasing our sheep. We have domestics in close proximity. I've never known Mount Hull to have any type of die-off, though, so we're getting pretty lucky. Last fall, this little guy, boy, what a weekend I had. So I get a phone call. This lady informs me she is taking care of one of my bighorn sheep lambs. And I'm like, really? What happened? And she saw a dog she didn't know, basically plummel this lamb up against a fence in her pasture. She ran out and drugged the dog off. The dog had it by the throat and was shaking it pretty well when she shooed the dog away. She took the lamb to a vet, and the vet inspected the lamb and sent it home with her and said, you know, take care of it for 3 days and it should be okay. And I'm like, well, let me come, you know, take a look and see what's going on. And so she has this lamb in this little shed, which was no bigger than 10 by 10, which is fine, I guess. But 200 feet away, she had 9 domestic sheep. And so I'm like, great. There was no interaction between the sheep and the domestics and this guy. So I didn't want the sheep that close to the domestics. So we arranged to take the sheep back to the vet, and the vet could monitor the sheep for 3 days. So this is a Friday. Everything happens on a Friday afternoon at 5, okay? So this was Friday afternoon at 5, okay? So we took the sheep back to the vet. Very nice of the vet to take the sheep. I asked the vet, you know, I'm talking to him on the cell phone. I go, what kind of pen do you have for this sheep? Because, you know, that one sheep can jump 11 feet. I'm thinking it's going to be pretty hard to confine a sheep. He said, we have a quarantine horse stall with walls to the ceiling. I'm like, great, put him in there. So I took the sheep down, put him in there, or I handed him off, and I went home. And Sunday, and I go, I'll be back Monday morning. Sunday morning, I get a phone call from the vet. Come get your sheep. And I'm like, really? What's going on? Come get your sheep. Okay, I'm there. And so so I went, and yeah, the walls went to the ceiling, but the door did not. And the sheep got out. The sheep, being a sheep, climbed on every shelf in this guy's building. So the stall was in a corner of his bigger building. The sheep climbs on every shelf, knocks everything off, works its way through the dog kennel into an operating table, got up on the stainless steel table and bumped the faucet, turned on the faucet and flooded his operating room, and proceeded to climb on every shelf in the operating room. So when I get there, quickly I may add, so when I got there, the sheep is back in the horse stall, hogtied with a blanket over it. So I put an ear tag in the lamb, and I let it go back on the mountain. Unfortunately, I've not seen the lamb since. I personally don't believe it made it. So dogs are definitely an issue to both of these herds. We have fence issues. I forgot to mention one of our largest rams in Sinlahiken was hung up on a fence this year and died. I don't know how he got on a fence. It was a fence in downtown Loomis. It was a very nice ram, though. I don't know how it happened. Just got hung up on a fence and died. So fences are an issue on Mount Hull and out there. Not really sure what to do about it. Domestics, again, the plea, if anybody has domestics near these herds or near any bighorn sheep, please double fence and make a barrier. So the disease transmission is negated. So Omak Lake is a very interesting herd. It's managed strictly by the Colville Confederated Tribes. It's fully within their reservation. It actually was naturally established. So one day it shows up, and everybody was wondering, you know, where did these sheep come from? And the best corridor would be up to Mount Hull. It's north-south. There's no rivers to cross. There's no, you know, highways to cross. There's no housing areas to cross. It's the most natural corridor. Jerry King was a biologist here at the time in the mid-90s, and he swore to me up and down that they did not come from Mount Hull. They came from the Sinlahiken. And that means they would have to cross, they'd have to come out of the Sinlihican, cross Highway 97, cross the river, cross through orchards, you know, a whole gauntlet of obstacles compared to going north-south to Mount Hull. And so, but he was adamant. So I'm like, okay, they must have come from there. And so, let's see if I can get this right. So the Colville tribe, when they got their grant to start their herd, their Hell's Gate reserve herd, they actually put radio collars on Mount Hull. And in that process, they collected DNA. And they analyzed that DNA against the DNA of Mount Hull and Sinlihican herds. And what we have is the green is a Sinlihican herd. The red is a Mount Hull herd. And the five blues are the five sheep they sampled from the Omak Lake herd. And they got four of the five tied exactly to the Sinlihican herd. So Jerry King is vindicated. So Jerry King was right. Jerry King said that they came out of the southern Sinlihican Valley, went through Pine Creek area, crossed north of Riverside, and then went straight down Tunk and straight into Omak Lake. That was their route. One tied to Mount Hull. So one tied to Mount Hull. So which one was that? So here's a very interesting thing the radio callers displayed from the tribe. So here's Omak Lake. That's where the Omak Lake herd is. These are tests. You don't put out an expensive radio collar without testing it. So these are test points that the biologist did. Okay, so he comes down south a little bit, but on November 14th, is it 2010? November 14th, 2010, a 7-year-old ram left Omak Lake and went straight north, and he stays about a mile or 3 miles east of the river, and he went all the way to Mount Hull, and he hung out at Mount Hull, but on Christmas Day, he was back in Omak Lake. So I think we know which one tied to Mount Hull. Yeah. So this tells me that north-south corridor and that corridor from Sinlihican to Omak Lake is still present. Okay. So there is some interaction. How much interaction between these herds, we don't know. But we know that there is. That has its pros and cons. It's good in the sense that we can get some genetic diversity between all the herds, that we don't have to keep moving them. There's some natural genetic exchange. That's great. That's great for the health of the herd. However, if Mount Hull gets a disease outbreak, can Omak Lake? Can Sinlihican? So it has its pros and cons. So another thing the tribe did was this February, they released 18 sheep from the Yakima, two of the Yakima herds, the Tyotin and the Clemens. They went down and captured there, and they released them at Omak Lake. So they're trying to build up the herd at Omak Lake. They've dealt with a lot of issues of habitat, and now they're trying to augment and build the herd. So if Omak Lake builds further, will we get more connectivity? Will we get more exchange? I don't know. That's just something we have to wait and see. And I actually kiped this. This isn't Omak Lake. This is a Manson herd capture, but it looks cool. So the Hell's Gate Reserve herd, okay? Hell's Gate Reserve was started in 2009 with augmentations in 2010, 2011. Again, it's solely managed by the Colville Confederated Tribe. It's within their reservation. It was started with Mount Hull, Tyotin, and Clemens Bighorn Sheep. So Clemens and Tyotin are down in the Yakima area. Mount Hull's up here. They've done incredibly well. The Tyotin and Clemens herds were very large, and we were able to give them quite a few animals from both those herds. And in these 3 years, they're already up to 130 animals. That is a big herd. That's bigger than Mount Hull and Sinlihican each. Their habitat analysis for this area, this Hell's Gate Reserve area, indicates they can have upwards of 400 animals. So it would be one of the largest herds in the area. So will that then connect to Omak Lake via the Columbia River? It might via the cliffs on the north side of the Columbia River. It might. We'll just have to wait and see. If they do get to 400, it very well might connect. So we'll see. But the tribe has actually done very good starting that herd. One thing I like about assisting the tribe with that is if Mount Hull or Sinlahican ever declines and we need to get sheep, it's a whole lot easier going close to get sheep instead of going back to Oregon or going back to Kamloops. So I was more than happy to help them. And you got to have a picture of flying sheep. I don't know how many people have that photo. That was actually Sinlahican, our capture at Sinlahican. So the Vaso Lake herd up in British Columbia, which I'm sure speak French, I'm sure. So in their survey in 2010, they found 225 animals. Their management plan also calls for 400. So again, another large herd in close proximity. This herd suffered a pneumonia die-off in 2000. So they were hoping to be well established at 400 by this time, but they had that die-off. Luckily, the die-off did not come further south to Mount Hull. We've documented and ear-tagged sheep from Mount Hull going up to Vaso Lake. So we know that there's connectivity between Vaso Lake and Mount Hull. We're pretty lucky. We're pretty lucky that we didn't, Mount Hull didn't suffer like, or when Vaso got pneumonia, that we didn't get it. It was pretty lucky. Yeah, if they get 400 sheep, if they get to that point, what they want to get to, I would expect more connectivity as well. Another thing I found interesting, just purely interest, is in 1987, British Columbia actually added the bighorn sheep and the elk to their shield. The bighorn sheep represents mainland, and the elk represents Vancouver Island. And they just added that. So I thought it was pretty cool they chose a bighorn sheep. Pretty cool. So one thing that I do want you guys to realize is the amount of connectivity that Omak Lake, Sinlahican, Mount Hull, and Vaso Lake has. They are all connected still. And that speaks very well for the Okanagan that we still have that connectivity. And like I said, hopefully that'll spawn some genetic interchange and keep our herds healthy. The downside is if one gets a disease, the potential is greater for the others to get it as well. I don't know if they smell each other or if they follow the habitat. I think the one from Omak Lake actually came from Mount Hull and knew the route. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they find each other. Obviously, the ones that left the Sinlahican for and ended up at Omak Lake, they weren't following anybody. They just started walking and found some great habitat and stayed. So I'm not sure how they end up finding each other. I also get reports of skulls in places where they shouldn't be, in really bad, completely forested habitat with no cliff talus anywhere near. And those are guys that dispersed and completely went the wrong way. So it happens, I think some leave and get lucky and some leave and don't get lucky. So thank you. Thanks for letting me talk.